there's many, not stories, many inspiring life stories about women that are no different than perhaps men, but equally inspiring.
Okay, we're here on September 25th, 2014 at 10:30 a.m. at Coors Field, home of the Colorado Rockies baseball team. And we are here to talk with Linda Martinez Alvarado for the National Women's Hall of Fame and the Colorado Women's Hall of Fame.
And my name is Linda Grace Martinez de Sandoval Alvarado. I'm the president and CEO of Alvarado Construction and a co-owner of the Colorado Rockies. My mother's family has been in New Mexico since the 1580s, part of the land grants, the Mora land grants in northern New Mexico. My dad's family, they were Spanish, and they came to America and were in Cabo, not the affluent part of Cabo now, but in the mining industry. My parents met, interestingly enough, in church. We're not Catholic, which is not a negative, is that they became Protestant migrant missionaries, and they followed the Grubbs. And so the traveling component of it brought my mother's family with my father's family together. The history is long, came here before the Pilgrims, but Native American as well, and we're all one family. But the family grew up in basically rural areas, agriculture. You raised what you ate, you sewed what you wore, and you came together not just as family, but as communities. And I think part of that DNA still exists. And yes, we do have large Hispanic families, but I think it is the encouragement and the hard work that has enabled not just Hispanos, but Hispanas now to achieve many, many things in America. We lived in an outlying area of Albuquerque. We did not have indoor plumbing. Plumbing had been invented. We just didn't have it. And my mother would bring water from the ditch, the sequia, and wash clothes. And we would start with me, first of all, taking a bath in the small container. And as you got older, they added more water. I grew up with five brothers and no sisters. And I didn't realize then, as I do now, it was probably basic training for my future career. My parents were very focused on church, school, and of course, sports. And they did not silo me into feeling like I should do certain things because I was a girl. And my dad would say, when you have six kids, you've got a team. So we played all kinds of sports. If it had a ball, we played it. I used to help him change the oil under the car, and my mother said my job was to study, so therefore I do not know how to cook. But I want to emphasize that I think that their real focus was not letting us use who we were, where we were, to prevent us from seeing where we could go. Focusing on, my mother would say, don't look for excuses why you can't do something. Look for reasons. Look for reasons. And my mother would tell me, you're just upset, Linda, because you're not the oldest. I'd go, you're just upset because you're not the baby. I'd go, then she would say, you're probably upset because you're the only girl. And I'd go, yeah. And she would say, live and learn. Not because she was not empathetic. She said, someday you're going to meet people that are taller than you, went to a better school than you, look better than you, came from a last name that people could actually pronounce correctly. And they're going to remind you maybe that you're a woman and you have a Hispanic last name. Don't look for excuses. Look for reasons to succeed. I grew up with boys, and sports was what we did. Yes, I built forts in the backyard. I thought everybody had an erector set, but it was really all about sports. So the last day of elementary school, they were having field day at my elementary school. And I came home, and I'm going, and my mother said, "What's wrong?" I said, "Ma, I tried to sign up for the high jump, and they told me I couldn't." She said, "Why?" She said, "Venga, say, let's go." I said, "Where are we going to go? We don't have a car." She took me to the principal's office. I had never been to the principal's office before in my life. And Mr. White is 6'8", the principal. My mother's 4'11", and I'm terrified. She said, "Mr. White, Linda really wants the high jump." And he says, "You don't understand. This is what girls do. They can do tetherball, volleyball, they get to do dodgeball, and we have all these snacks and treats." But she says, "Linda really wants to do this." He says, "But Mrs. Martinez, this is our tradition." And so she said, "Please think about it." So we go home, and she makes me a quesadilla and water. We could afford milk. I just didn't like milk. Now that I'm an adult, I can drink other beverages with it. And she said, "Linda, you've got to raise your hand. If you're not breaking the rules, ask." I said, "Okay." So a week later, I come home. She says, "How's it going?" I said, "I got an A on my spelling test." She said, "No, with the high jump." She said, "Venga." She took me back to the principal's office again. and she said, "Please, Mr. White, what if other girls want to do this? I signed up for the high jump." And then, like many times, women and girls, when we're put in positions where it's high scrutiny, I got scared. Because what if I didn't do well? People would make fun of me. It's not just about me, what about other girls? But I participated. I was the only girl that signed up, and I won the high jump. But this story is not about me. This story is about my mother and other mothers and other women who didn't have the opportunities but encouraged other women to raise their hand. I still have the blue ribbon. My father was a very fair-skinned man with blue eyes, and I look very much like him, in a good way. He was a great influence. His father was a minister, and he would tell me, "Linda, you've got to really think about the right things to do." Well, I'm just thinking about what to do in the afternoon. And while he was not overly strict, there was no dating, no dancing, no drinking, no movies. In Spanish we say no nada, which didn't mean it was confined. It was about focusing on the things that they felt would keep us not in control, but to elevate ourselves in doing not just the right things, but doing things right. My dad would say, "You cannot smoke or drink." And he said, "The thing about smoking is it won't kill you, but it'll make you smell like you've been to hell. And it's the leadership shadow you cast in terms of how you influence other people." So less about smoking, more about how do we do things to help others. My parents said I had to do something to help other people. We're living week to week. They don't have a bank account. So my younger brother and I are trying to figure out what are we going to do to help others, because that was the whole purpose, family, community. So we put together a thing, and we went around the neighborhood and told people, "We'll rake your leaves, we'll sweep your porch, we'll pick up your trash." But the money was not going to go to us. My parents said that this would be an investment in our character, not an investment in a savings account. And I think the DNA of understanding that the reason I can be here today is because other people helped me. I had a sixth grade teacher, Miss Loy Sue Sigenthaler. Very tall, very thin, single. And she put together a group of us in sixth grade to do after school reading, extra credit, without getting extra credit. And we would read biographies. And we read the biographies of Amelia Earhart, Joan of Arc, Madame Curie, about women who were doing things. Now, there were no biographies of Hispanic women, but it was encouraging us to understand, even at that young age, what people could do. the idea she was embedding in us is that work is not work. Work can be a lot of fun. Work can be a challenge. But guess what? Work is not a four-letter word. You can thrive. And quite frankly, I will always remember her as being one of the first great role models with school that I had. I was involved in activities in school. Adelantes, which means to help. It was an organization of young women who would try to help other people succeed, not just people in their class, but people in community. Participated in the Honor Society and also, of course, sports. So if there was a sport, of course, I was out there to play it. As the president of the sports club, but really most importantly, encouraging other women to get involved, because a lot of young girls, while we had been in gym and physical education, there were just being teams formed now where we were beginning to play girls from other schools. Not just because of legislation saying, gee, they should have the opportunity, women. And women basically were, for the most part, young women focused on single person sports. Tennis, skating, you know, maybe golf. And that has changed. And it changed not just the dynamics of what was going on in physical education, but the teamwork that brought girls together. In ninth grade, I had a civics teacher who encouraged me to get involved in the debate team. I said, I don't know what a debate team is. I said, I have constant debate with my brother, but... And she encouraged me to do that. And we practice. But of course, the story of my life is all guys and a girl. And not only did we win the high school competition, we went to the state and we won the award, my partner and I, for first negative on the debate, winning the state title. And we went up to the podium, everybody was very happy, and they handed out the trophies. I was presented with this trophy, and I said, I'm happy, but I don't want it. I said, what do you mean you don't want it? I said, I want one with a girl. And they said, they don't make them. And even though women were beginning to do things, pretty much it was still male recognition of achievement. But I still have it.
Tell us about what you thought about college when you were in grade school or at high school, and where you ended up.
Well, growing up, you don't always think about what career we start with. Growing up, I'm not sure I was focused on what career I would pursue. I thought early on I might want to be a historian, an anthropologist or an archaeologist or something fun like that. But then, you know, through the course of college, I was not certain which direction to go. And many girls did not go to college, and Hispanic girls, very few went to college. And I thought about it. I had gotten an offer for a scholarship for softball from the University of Southern Illinois, which was one of the first universities that ever offered girls an athletic scholarship. But I ultimately decided to go to Pomona on an academic scholarship. I thought about I should pursue the softball, I pursue the sports, but at that point in time, I'm not sure that would have been the driver. As life turns out, it comes full circle, and of course now I'm involved in baseball. My brothers went to college in Albuquerque, I went in California, and my dad was terrified because I was in a co-ed dorm. I said, Dad, I grew up with five brothers, I've been in a co-ed dorm all my life. But what surprised me is I had never shared room with other girls. and it was not just interesting, it was fun. I was starting to learn how to comb my hair and other things. But going away to school enabled me to broaden, I think, my horizon of getting outside of my silo and meeting other people and looking at other possibilities. And young girls were pursuing careers now in science, looking at medicine, looking at very non-traditional types of things instead of just home ec and nursing. And nothing wrong with those two, but doing other things. I needed a job. My parents are living week to week, okay? And they posted the jobs on the bulletin board. Groundskeeping, food service, and landscaping. Spending too much time in the library. My mother said my job was to study. I didn't know how to cook. So I applied for the landscaping job. And the gentleman says, what are you doing here? I said, I really need a job. My parents live week to week. I need to buy toothpaste. And he said, what are you doing here? And he sent me to my college advisor for counseling. Well, 2 weeks later, I came back and he said, what are you doing here? It kind of reminded me a little bit of my mother, you know, when she waited a week and then we went to go back again to ask if we could participate in the high jumping. And he said to me, listen, you're not going to be able to wear those shoes, those clothes, you're going to be out in the sun, you're going to be doing heavy lifting, and you're going to be working with all these guys. And I told myself, let me get this right. I don't have to wear these painful shoes. I get to wear Levi's to work every day. I'm going to get a tan. I don't have to go to the gym. And I don't pay you. You pay me to work with all these single guys. Of course, I didn't say it publicly. But the reality is we sometimes have to have a balance in making certain that even though the road does not seem to be smooth and easy, try it. He gave me the job. And I think he thought I would quit or they would make me quit simply because they were all guys. The following summer, I got a job. I needed a job. And unlike the economy sometimes that it's very, very low, you know, things are cyclical. In the late 60s and 70s, inflation was rampant. Interest was double digit. Time was money and the economy was booming. And in Los Angeles, they couldn't build things fast enough. So I applied for a job with a development company and I used my initials, LG, even though it was just a development company. And it was on a construction site and I got the job only because they couldn't find enough people to fulfill it. There were no other women on the job when I was transferred to the site. And quite frankly, I was not very well accepted or welcomed. People wanted to know, who is she? The girlfriend? The love child? The mistress? The feminist? What is she trying to prove? And in reality, I needed the job. there were no federal rules or laws that you should have separate restroom facilities anywhere. Why would you need one on a construction site? And I would go inside and there'd be drawings of me in various stages of undress. And it was disheartening very often. And, you know, think of the time women, number of times women we feel unwelcome, made to feel unqualified, made to feel incapable. But I told myself, okay, my hair did look kind of good in that one. And in every drawing, I have my hard hat on, so they know I'm OSHA compliant. And while sexual harassment is not funny, you need to have not just a sense of commitment, a sense of direction, you sometimes need a sense of humor. And over time, not immediately, but over the years, for as many men who were doing the drawings, other men began washing them off because they had other daughters and wives who had similar aspirations. The irony of this, some of the artists later came to work for me. I didn't return the favor. I loved the work. It was a very creative process, starting from an idea to a conceptual design, to a design, to building foundations and the completion of the construction. I thought it was very creative. I took art, I didn't take home ec. I tried to take shop, they wouldn't let me take shop, but I liked it. And by then, I was processing applications for payments, submittals, RFIs, and other kinds of things. And I was blessed with a lazy boss who would put work on my desk and say, you can do it, because he liked long lunches and to play golf. And he became a mentor in many sort of ways, not because he necessarily was a champion of women, but he helped me to understand how I can do it. I was walking a job site with an architect and looking at process, schedule, percentage complete, and he turns around, grabs me around the arm to cuddle me up, and he looks at me and says, what's a nice girl like you doing in a place like this? And I tried to think, was this a pickup line, or was he really curious what I was trying to do? And while I was not really happy with the remark, it made me think about, what was I doing there? Was it just a job? Was I doing it just to, you know, survive? And in many ways, it got me to think that maybe if I really wanted to succeed at things, I needed to do something different. So I took a class in survey, which didn't seem important, but if you move the rod, the whole building goes wrong direction. But most importantly, critical path method scheduling, computerized scheduling, was just coming into being. Prior to that, you know, men would go to Dunkin' Donuts in the morning and, you know, put the schedule on the napkin. At the end of the day, you'd go to the bar and, you know, update the schedule on a coaster. Of course, it was more detailed than that, but this changed the industry, and there were very, very few people there. But I got these crazy ideas that maybe I could be a contractor. Crazy. And I thought, well, maybe someday I could build a 7-Eleven or a duplex. So I began to think about it over the kitchen table, trying to draw things, and decided that might be a little bit big of a jump. So because the economy was so strong, I started a small little curb, gutter, and sidewalk company. And they couldn't find enough people and enough things, and I would sign the proposals with my initials, LG, and I would take them in. Of course, they thought I was the secretary taking them in, and was able to get work and recruited some guys, crazy guys, to come work for me. And that was the beginning or the foundation of the company. Later on, I'm thinking, oh, I can build high-rises. Not that quickly, but the first structures I actually built were bus shelters that people stand in to stay out of the rain while they're waiting for the transit line or the bus to come. Concrete, prefabbed things, but I could only do 20 at a time because of cash and cash flow. Over time, I ended up doing 380 of them and wanted to move to bigger things, and proceeded by approaching general contractors, trying to price it not just competitively, trying to get in the door, but I would tell them, you got to be creative if you're trying new things, particularly if you're a woman. If you buy the concrete, you'll save 15% markup, okay? You're going to save money. If you pay me every 2 weeks, we can do this. And of course, at first they're saying, oh my God, you know, can we trust her? Over time, that's how I was able to do it. Later, as we grew, I couldn't get any bigger unless I had capital, cash and cash flow. And that was difficult. Like other women, were trying to get loans, and you had to dress the part. You were trying to dress so people would say, she's serious, she's in business. So no matter what industry you were in, you put your tie on. Whether it was well tied or not, you had to go in with the tie, and always with the dress, with the tie. So I went to 6 banks to try to get loans. They all turned me down. I don't know why they didn't have confidence in a young Hispanic woman contractor. They said, you have no collateral. I tried to pledge my children, and they told me, no, they're really liabilities, not assets. I know that now. And women could not get loans without either their husband's or their father's signature. And my husband and my father were neither in the business. What my parents did without telling me, though, is they mortgaged their two-room, not two-bedroom, two-room adobe house at not a bank, but somewhere, for 21% interest, and they borrowed $2,800 without telling me. It scared me. It was a gift. I repaid them, but I'll never be able to repay them for having confidence in me that I could succeed. I later found out that even if you're turned down by banks, the Small Business Administration had a program that was a 90% guaranteed if you couldn't get a loan. Of course, there was a lot of paperwork with it, but there's ways to find things to get it done, but there's always going to be a risk. You know, I was told that the banks did not have confidence in me because lack of track record, okay, financials, experience, are you crazy kinds of things. And so always questioning ability in that regard. And the reality is that it wasn't really their lack of perspective. It was the lack of women trying and like to break through the glass ceiling. In my case, I'm trying to break through the concrete ceiling, and it's gonna be a lot harder to get there.
Definitely concrete.
Okay. The reason I was always told, I would propose, and I'd go in for debriefs, which are very painful, because they tell you why you didn't get the project and everything that was wrong. So it reinforced that lack of track record, financial made you stronger, number of years in business, and the biggest one I ever had was I was the only woman who had ever submitted a proposal. And he leaned over the desk and said to me, "Does your mother know you're doing this?" And while it seemed like a crazy question, it really motivated me to say, my mother does know I'm doing this, and one day I'm going to let you know that why I'm doing this. And while it was a joke to myself, when you experience constant rejection, you want to get up. And if for no other reason, I wanted to show them that I could do something. And the reality is, it wasn't like me against them. There were other women who were wondering, why was I doing this? You shouldn't be doing this, that, and the other. We have to be careful that other people's lack of vision does not cloud our perspective in keeping focused on achieving our goals and dreams. Was it easy? No. When I started business, I thought I was selling construction services. I had to sell credibility, capability, capacity, and I couldn't do it. So I joined community organizations, which women were beginning to do, but not women's organizations, chambers, industry associations. I was asked to be on the board of the Boy Scouts. I was never a Girl Scout. But getting involved so people could meet me, because they had never seen one, and quite frankly, I think the networking opportunity had not been available to women at that point. No guarantees, but to break the stereotypes that we weren't capable, didn't have the capacity or the ability to do the things we were doing. And quite frankly, I was asked to be on the board of directors of a bank when I was 27 years old because I met the chair of the United Banks of Colorado, who was on the Boy Scout board. Don't just be a member, get involved, as my mother would say, and assume leadership positions to show your commitment, but also to partner with others so that it's not just a win for you, but a win-win for everyone. I started business in California, and then we moved to Colorado. My husband, who's very successful in the restaurant business, had an opportunity to go into the restaurant business in Denver. So we loaded everything up in the little tiny car, drove here, and the deal fell through. So we drove back. But we thought about it. Denver was booming. Independent Oil. There were cranes in downtown everywhere. Denver was really an economically high-growth city. Didn't know anybody. But quite frankly, easier to network and communicate. And there were many women already assuming leadership roles in advocating for women on corporate boards, for women to be involved at senior levels in banking. in higher education, not just as the principal, but head of the state system for education. Not just nurses, but also doctors, heads of practices. And I was able to meet some remarkable women. Larae Arroyon, Josie Heath, M.L. Hansen, Gail Shetler, Pat Schroeder, Beverly Haddon. And quite frankly, they were older than I was, but they were great role models. And they put together this organization, which Larae led, and she called it the Velvet Hammer. soft, but strong. In going to large corporations, and both in business, in community, and in government, advocating that women should be not just given opportunities, championed, mentored, and go on their corporate boards. And because of that advocacy, I'm sure that not just myself, but other women benefited from that. Again, the value and contribution of diversity, no matter how one would define it, but in particular, enabling not just people with success stories, but thought leaders to come together on boards, not to manage the company, but to add value. Women, quite frankly, added value, not just as consumers, but as suppliers. Not just as traditional views about women, but their experience, their background, their analytical ability certainly added value. If businesses did not understand the need to change, they become history. And I don't know of any museums that, you know, worship business fossils. Getting women to the game was one thing, adding value was another, and while we've made inroads, we still have a long way to go. But the advocacy has enabled women not just to get on boards, but to now assume positions in C-suites and as CEOs and chairmen of company. Is it easy? No. But we have the ability, capacity, and the wherewithal. When I started business, you know, it was very small, and by then, you know, I was trying to fit in the construction industry, hard hat, you know, kind of stereotype, redneck, beer belly. When I got pregnant, I outgrew them a bit, and being pregnant on a construction site was quite a challenge. My daughters were born, and they were in school, and they were telling their friends in elementary school that their mother was a contractor. And the kids are saying, no, and the teachers, well, they both got sent to the principal's office because they thought they were making it up. But bought them this book about women can do anything. And it was while it was published in 72, and this was later, it was not just about what women were doing, it was inspiring young girls to see the possibilities of what they could do. It's funny and interesting in many ways that while the stereotype was there, reading about it was one thing, but my husband supporting me was quite another. For a man to say, I'm married to a contractor, but he was a champion of women. Trying to balance work life is always hard, particularly if you're working. And in a business, you don't work 9 to 5. My business now is in multiple states, and it's going to be Mother's Day. It's the mother-daughter brownie banquet. And I can't go, and my daughter is on the floor screaming, oh, you gotta go. What I didn't understand was they had sewn this heart out of lace, and they were going to take a picture with them and their mother, and forever this would be in their heart of the mother-daughter brownie banquet. I said, I can't go. I'm going to meet with the chairman and CEO of Pacific Bell on a project. So my husband says, I'll go. I said, you'll go? And he said, yeah, I'll go. Well, he did go. Their favorite picture together, even to this day, is of them with the mother-daughter brownie banquet. And the next year I was available to go, they didn't want me to go. But I think because the other women fawned on him, maybe. But he was ahead of his time. And men changing during this period of time, not just women and partnering together. It's not easy, work-life balance. But in reality, this is a team and a partnership, and while women are changing, men in many ways are understanding that it's dual parenting that has made the difference. I was asked to speak at my son's kindergarten class, and it was like career day. What do you want to do when you grow up? And there were two parents who were asked, and I got up, I brought my hard hat, my level, you know, my tape measure, my iPad, my mini, and we talked about what I did. After the event, my son's teacher asked Rob what he wanted to do when he grew up. Rob, don't you want to be a contractor like your mother? And he just kind of looks at her and goes, don't you want to build buildings, high rises, you know, Bronco Stadium? And he said, no, that's women's work.
The Linda Alvarado oral history moves from inside at Coors Field, home of the Colorado Rockies baseball team, to the bleachers outside. While Linda Alvarado stands in the stadium, you can hear the sounds of the environment, including the maintenance of the field and the traffic of Denver, Colorado.
I was in my office one afternoon and I got a call from the governor of Colorado, Governor Roy Romer. And I thought it was about a political event perhaps he wanted me to support. I had been appointed to the State Merit System Council, so I knew the governor. But he said, I want to have a meeting with you at the Brown Palace. Wow, the Brown Palace, I said. You know, that's a huge, iconic hotel here in Denver. We sat down, and we started to talk. And it turned out it was nothing about politics. He was very, very focused to try to put together a group of what he called risk takers pursue a Major League Baseball team. Now, Colorado had been trying to get one for years and years and years. There were no Major League teams between Kansas City and Los Angeles. And the Major League Baseball had not done an expansion since 1976. And you can't just start your own baseball team. And we were in competition. So the story of my life is all guys and a girl. So a handful of guys, five guys and a girl, and I got together at one point to talk about pursuing this. Well, I went home, and I was going to talk to my husband about this. I went home that afternoon, and I was going to, you know, think about it. And the irony of this is the first date I went with this guy, who later became my husband, 5.5 years later, was to a Dodger game. Not in Brooklyn, in Los Angeles. I'm not that old. And he told me about 6 weeks later that he had fallen madly in love with me. I said, oh yeah, sure. Then I thought about it, and I thought, well, maybe. My looks, my charm, my personality, my sense of humor. He said, none of that. I said, none of that? And he said, none of that. I said, what? He said, you're the only girl I've ever taken to a Dodger game who put onions on her hot dogs, and this was a sign from God that you are the one. Let me just tell you, the reason I was putting onions on that hot dog is because I had absolutely, positively no intention of kissing that guy. So I went home, and Dr. Robert, I wanted to share with him, and he looked at me and said, Linda, are you crazy? I said, yes, Robert, I married you. This was a high-risk venture. It wasn't just about we should have one for democracy, because there wasn't another team between Kansas City and Los Angeles. It's about revenue sharing. And you're in competition with other cities. And Major League Baseball will evaluate these proposals greatly. For Colorado and Denver to particularly convince Major League Baseball, it was going to be huge. And you put down a lot of money in your deposit before they will, number one, begin to consider you. Number two, we had to pass a 6-county referendum that we had not only the resources, but the capacity and the approval to build a major league stadium, because there wasn't one here. The other thing is, could we manage the team? And it took a period of time in the course of the interviews for us to convince not just them, but also ourselves. It was fun, it's exciting, but it was also a little risky, because unlike when you put a deposit down on the car and you get your money back, you don't get your money back on this. We were selected, and no one gave us a chance in the world. But this has been a phenomenal experience. My dad was a catcher in summer recreational leagues, and he would let me go in between innings and sweep off the plate, which is the only plate I still know how to clean. But the opportunity, even with five brothers, most men would never have that opportunity. There was no requirement that women be involved or minority, you know, participation. These were risk takers, and it changed not only getting Denver to the big leagues. Lower downtown became the iconic area of redevelopment in the city. You know, who would have ever dreamed that the first Latino owner of a Major League Baseball team would actually be a Latina? Linda said, oh, you're just interested in baseball because, you know, Latinos, you're good at baseball. They told me, just like blacks, they're good at basketball, and women are just good at, I said, well, women are just good at everything. People don't realize that in the major leagues, it wasn't just African Americans who were not allowed to play in the big leagues. It was also Latinos. Opening the doors, as Branch Rickey did with Jackie Robinson, increased a huge talent pool that had not been utilized, increased the salaries, not just of the players who were in the Negro Leagues, but the players of all players, and increased the value of the team, because there was a whole new audience and a whole new talent pool that hadn't been tapped and changed the game. Latinos are good at baseball, but the difference is, not because it's in our DNA, in every stadium, the rules are the same. Everyone gets three balls and four strikes, and even if you strike out, you get another turn at bat. No player is playing there for the sake of diversity. It is the opportunity, and what baseball has done, I believe, is what women are also seeking and advocating. The level playing field, access to opportunities, access to get into the game, the ability to compete, no guarantees, but the opportunity to try. And we need to continue to advocate that level playing field for women in all areas, because the beneficiaries are not just women. In every industry, every area, every pursuit, the beneficiaries are also men and boys, our country, and the world.
This podcast was made possible with support from the Institute of Museum and Library Services.